Welcome back to the USCHoops.com college basketball podcast. This is the July 17th, 2022 edition. The USCHoops.com college basketball podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. We apologize. We've been a little bit on hiatus this summer, mainly because there hasn't been a ton of news, and there's still not a ton of news, but we really wanted to do our best to get information to you. And in that vein, this is your co-host Chase, as always joined by Nick, and this time joined by Romer. Romer, Nick, how are you guys doing?
Doing great, Chase. Doing well. Great to be back.
Yeah, definitely good to be back.
Okay, so we're going to cover some of the kind of latest recruiting developments, personnel developments, just overall situation we're seeing with not only basketball recruiting, but this is also affecting football recruiting because of the NIL situation. So I know Nick in particular really wants to get you guys, wants to podcast, get everyone involved, get everyone up to date. So I'm going to kind of throw things to Nick for a second here and just kind of give us his thoughts on where we stand on this, you know, July 17th, midsummer point, maybe some, 6-7 weeks before we hit Labor Day.
Yeah. So we're kind of tracking towards the end of AAU season here. And I think really are starting to get a good sense of where these players are ranked, how good they actually are, and just get a feel for more of their recruitment. So we just wanted to update everybody on those. Then there's the other factor of NIL, which for those of you who track USC football recruiting and to follow the podcast know how big of a part that is in college sports now. So that definitely seems to be impacting some of these recruitments and certainly impacted the lack of transfers showing interest in USC as well. So we just wanted to keep everyone posted on that. Chase, I don't know if you wanted to jump straight into recruiting or what, but.
Yeah, I think that's not a bad idea. I just, you know, as we're sitting here, I thought, hey, you know what? Because we're getting pretty deep into the summer. And I thought, you know, let's take a look at some of where the conference stands. USC obviously has no players committed for the class of 2023, but neither does UCLA. Arizona, now they had two players committed, but one is reclassifying to this fall. And that's Jared McCain, correct?
Kyle Boswell.
I get this too confused. Kyle Boswell. So he's actually going to be coming now. They both are, he and Lewis were both 2023 recruits for Arizona, but they kind of happened relatively early in the recruiting cycle. As we've gotten later on, Arizona hasn't really gotten any new 2023 recruits. Oregon has one in Jackson Shelsted, who's kind of like a top 100 guy, and he committed back in November. Stanford doesn't have anyone committed. Colorado doesn't have anyone committed. Washington doesn't have any. So, I mean, but the point being here that I cannot remember a time in my memory of college basketball when we would hit this point during the summer period and there are so few players committed to Pac-12 schools. What do you think of thoughts on that, Romer? Am I out of bounds here, or is my memory correct?
No, you're pretty right. It's really been a slow pace. A lot of the kids that they have been taking visits and they have been caught up in the AAU season, but there hasn't really been any traction in terms of kids making a decision. There was a kid, London Johnson, who we thought was a target and was apparently going to make a decision back on April 1st, but that never transpired. So a lot of kids, not just in California or in the West Coast, but nationally, they're kind of playing it slow.
Yeah, and I think there's a variety of reasons. I shouldn't say Stanford does have a kid in Carlisle, right? So they do have one, but he was also another guy that committed a while back. If you go to like the top 100 list, what schools have gotten commitments? Duke, Kentucky, the big national brands, North Carolina, Baylor. That's kind of the direction we've seen here. And I think there is a lot of pause on players making these commitments because of the NIL situation. But at the same time, USC is suffering under the NIL situation right now. So I guess I'll just kind of lay out what I have heard on this front, which is, and maybe all the Pac-12 schools are experiencing something similar to what we're experiencing, but our administration is being extraordinarily, I guess for their term would be, careful about how NIL is being utilized. Now, there's all kinds of little hurdles to using it. Obviously, you're not supposed to actually have this university or boosters directly involved in the NIL process. We've seen many schools openly flout that to one degree or another. I've posted on various forums, and I think if you read the Supreme Court opinion, or at least Kavanaugh's concurrence on the just an issue of benefits to student athletes, that it's going to make it extraordinarily hard for the NCAA to really clamp down on these types of payments based upon what the Supreme Court is saying and the direction they're heading, because of essentially because of antitrust concerns. So at USC, though, this overly cautious approach is really leading to difficulty with actually getting players to commit to the school. That happened during the transfer season, and it's happening now. And I know that for a fact. Now, maybe something can get worked out here and there are some changes coming. I have a feeling that this is plaguing other schools as well. As I mentioned, Arizona had gotten a couple kids, but that was really before kind of the NIL bonanza went really crazy. Stanford has a player committed, but that, you know, it's, Stanford's a unique situation. UCLA has struggled to get players committed so far, obviously. And they even lost out on a player to Gonzaga, which seemed like an odd decision, in my opinion, since UCLA was pushing so hard. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on just the struggles that schools in the Pac-12 seem to be having? And actually, it's not just the Pac-12. Really, other than the Blue Bloods nationwide, there seem to be some struggles in getting some of these kids locked down.
Yeah, and to even add another example on top of that, Oregon had Mookie Cook committed, who is a kid from Portland, ranked fifth in the class, and he just backed out within the last few weeks from Oregon, almost assuredly for money reasons. So I think Oregon's even struggling with it, despite having Phil Knight. It looks like he might go to the G League. That's probably the favorite. You had Gigi Jackson over in South Carolina, who was the top recruit in the 2023 class, who just backed out of North Carolina, who was supposedly his dream school. And now it looks like he's going to reclass up to 2022 and go to South Carolina with a rumored package pushing $3 million. So you still see a lot of money floating around in the SEC, places like Miami with John Ruiz. You know, they notably have a very good collective there in football and basketball. They got Nigel Pack in basketball from Kansas State, who was, I believe he's like a 17 point a game scorer. They beat out USC for that lineman, Francis Magoa, the left tackle, who was originally from, I believe, Samoa, but had California roots, and then was at IMG Academy, and USC could not reel him in for NIL reasons, because Ruiz and the collective won out there again. So I think the USC, the administration, they're really pushing out this Boulevard thing and that narrative. But at the end of the day, you know, unless there's money there, you know, kids just aren't going to be attracted to you know, going to play at USC right now. So they have to figure it out. They have to figure it out really fast. And I don't know if you have any thoughts from the, you know, legal standpoint of the whole thing. I know you mentioned Kavanaugh's concurrence, but I just have a really hard time seeing the NCAA come down on Miami, Louisville, Texas A&M, Texas. We have so many schools doing it and interpreting the NIL, you know, laws a certain way, and you have USC doing its totally own thing. That just seems like a recipe for disaster where you end up getting no players.
I think it potentially is a recipe for disaster. Now, look, this is, we're going to get into an area here where I think I may be one of the few people that thinks this, but my memory lasts longer than the Lincoln Riley hiring. So obviously SC stepped up big time in reeling in Lincoln Riley. That was it. And I was shocked, quite frankly. There's a huge amount of money. Where that came from, I think, is potentially a point of debate, but I really do not believe that came from the general budget of USC university operations. It certainly didn't come from the athletic department budget. Then obviously we had this news recently with the Big Ten, and that's a big, you know, bonanza. So I think that was a smart decision, although that's not really a financial commitment as such, but at least there was a commitment to, in principle, break away from some of SC's historic rivals and connections in order to kind of save itself. However, it wasn't that long ago that our administration elected to stick with Clay Helton for extra two seasons, which were lost seasons. And yeah, maybe we'll recover from that ultimately, but it certainly set the program into a very difficult position to the point where we needed to spend over $100 million, making over $100 million commitment to get a new head coach. So and that decision was, you know, at the time justified on the grounds of prudence and caution, which sounds a lot like what's going on with the NIL situation. So my guess is we'll proceed with this policy in some way or another for the time being until it becomes absolutely obvious that we're setting ourselves way behind. It's very damaging. And then we'll make an adjustment. And I don't like, I mean, I get that we got Lincoln Riley, and I realize that after many long years of being stuck in this absolutely terrible TV contract connected with the Pac-12, we were able to move on to the Big Ten. But, you know, I mean, that was, you know, that was like a generation. It was a 12-year commitment. I don't like this idea that we have to wait until every bad option or all the consequences of our bad decisions or inaction are fully realized and revealed and damage is thrust upon us, only to then finally, you know, take corrective course and do something that should have been done all along. I mean, in some ways, both the Lincoln Riley and the Big Ten thing were like overreactions to prior bad decisions, or acting late, acting imprudently, or when I say imprudently, really just acting overly cautious, making commitments to the old ways of doing things, not being a leader. So I worry that the NIL situation could result in the same type of problem. And, you know, SC, unfortunately, yeah, we're overly cautious. At the same time, SC could have the best NIL, program in the country if it used all of its resources. I mean, there's just so much money floating around in Los Angeles and amongst USC connected people. It's the center of entertainment in the United States. Obviously New York has its own media center, but Los Angeles is really the glitz entertainment capital of the world. And SC needs to, I mean, I guess that's the idea of Boulevard, is supposed to exploit this, but it's not really doing it yet. So, I mean, I've said a lot there, but I think I worry that SC will be overly cautious. And then at some point down the road, maybe it's a year down the road, they'll have to overcompensate the other direction. So, it would be much smarter to just kind of get ahead of things now, look for clever solutions if they're worried about the legal landscape. I'm just, you know, when I look at what happened in that court opinion, I do not see a really strong case, if this were ever to end up in some sort of court where the NCAA is challenging actions being taken by, let's say, John Ruiz in Miami, the NCAA is going to have a huge uphill battle. Now, maybe SC doesn't even want to put itself in that position. I think that's a kind of prudent way to do things. But you, then you just got to be not so overt about things. Doesn't mean you have to shut off all NIL. So anyway, that's a million things I've said. Romer, we haven't heard from you. Do you have any thoughts on this issue about what's going on in recruiting? Just kind of the lack of the ability for SC to bag guys right now, and also really that's spreading to the other teams in the current form of the Pac-12.
Well, I mean, yeah, we're definitely behind the eight ball when it comes to recruiting. Case in point, in football, we had a kid, Josh Connerly, who's the 5-star offensive lineman in the 2022 class. And everyone practically wrote him in as a USC commit. He was going to end up there, but he took an 11th hour trip to Oregon and never looked back. So that's kind of where it stands. We had a kid on the fold already, ready to commit, took a family with a picture and the beachfront and all that, saying that this is home, and Oregon swipes him away. And we're also going to lose out on kids too, just based on the fact that there's no real plan. A lot of kids and their families, they're asking for money up front. USC has Boulevard, and there's not real any direction. Nothing's really established yet. There's no collective, like you guys already mentioned. So kids and their families, they want money up front right now. So I've been glancing over the message boards, and then, you know, we're losing out the kids in football, like I stated. And the thing, general consensus is, you know, we just need to win. We need to win. We need to win. But then you have programs like Miami, Louisville, Texas A&M, Tennessee. These programs haven't won anything in the last decade, 20 years. And they're getting kids. They're hot in recruiting. So what's USC's excuse? It's NIL. That's basically where it stands. And unless something is in place, like you already mentioned, we're going to keep losing out on kids in football, basketball, because we're not ready to compete in that aspect. Simple as that.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely right, Romer, for sure. Like, the whole USC needs to win aspect is totally thrown out the window when you look at Louisville, right? Louisville is like the classic example. Like, they're getting kids left and right. They haven't done squat like ever. Tennessee, right? That's another great example. Miami. I mean, you hit all the programs, right? At least A&M could say, oh, we beat Alabama last year. So right, there's that. But these other programs, yeah, Miami, Louisville, even like Texas, right? To an extent, like, what has Texas ever done under Sarkisian? Like, that's been a joke. One thing I do want to interject here is we just got a post on a big message board from the Boulevard staff. It looks like it's their first post under this username. And I just want to go through some of it and then maybe throw it to you guys and kind of get your initial on the spot reaction here. So they kind of addressed several of the questions that have been, you know, floated about Boulevard, and Chase, obviously you have insight there as well. So let me run through a few of these points. So their first one, they say, is this a collective? They say, we view this as a collective plus model. USC leadership, USC partners, and our leadership put immense thought into building a model that would position USC as the leader in NIL. We analyzed many other program structures and weighed the pros and cons. They talked about how their advantage is efficiency, to meet the needs of the changing landscape. So it's obviously a platitude, right? They say they have a one entity model that can develop confidence and continuity with all parties. And then they used a bunch of, you know, platitudes about unity and market leverage and so forth. They are doing a membership tier system where they have general memberships beginning at $600, going up to $12,000 annually, and then an A-list tier for anyone contributing 25 grand or more per year. They say that when you sign up, you can contribute no more to a sport-specific fund. So I think that's a bit of a problem, because what if you want to donate all your money to football or basketball? The other 50 goes into a general athlete fund distributed to athletes based on need. So I think that's a big problem, because if you're looking to donate and you want to donate to basketball or football, then you can't give over 50% of that money to that individual sport. And because, like, what if you just don't want to contribute to, you know, tennis or volleyball? Then USC is going to block that, supposedly. Maybe there's a legal reason for that. I don't know. But that's a bit problematic, just reading through this. You cannot contribute to a specific athlete, but they do add that they encourage businesses to work with any individual athlete of their choosing, and we will facilitate the process through a marketing endorsement. So that sounds like they're trying to clean their hands of pay-for-play to specific athletes, but it sounds like it could be doable. Then they say, you know, lots more platitudes about how they want to change student athletes' lives, elevate recruiting, and win championships. They say that 15% of their proceeds going towards overhead. I think that's good that they have the transparency on that figure. Like, you know, I think a lot of people were wondering, okay, like how much of, are they just, you know, taking our money and not even distributing it to the athletes? So I think that's a plus that they're publishing that publicly. They don't speak to any potential student athletes because it's a violation of NCAA guidelines. Again, that could be problematic. Like obviously that's an NCAA rule, but you know, good luck, you know, bringing down John Ruiz on that for the reasons that Chase outlines. I do think that, you know, they do make a good point that Boulevard was definitely a help in Lincoln Riley's transfer class, but that does not seem to have carried over to the basketball transfer class in any way, shape, or form. And then they put a target and say that their goal is to raise $75 million from 2022 to 2026, $15 million annually through the membership programs, which that's a significant amount of money. If they can raise that, and that actually goes towards prospective student athletes, which again, you know, they seem reluctant to, you know, allocate that money towards recruits as opposed to current players, that could be a potential hurdle. And they'd say that they have further revenue opportunities such as group licensing, brand partnerships, third-party sponsorships, merchandise, content sales, amongst others. So I kind of rambled here. There's just a lot to kind of break down in this post, but Chase, I'll just put you on the spot here, throw it over to you. Do you have any kind of thoughts on what I just outlined here? Does this change your perspective based off of what you've heard and such?
I guess my first thought is that I'm glad that we had some technical issues with the podcast because this post only went up about 6 minutes ago. We would have had it if we just sped through things. Okay, so this is a great find, Nick. The main thought I have is they're buried in here, or not fully buried, but the references to kind of coordinating advertising licensing opportunities for the individual players, that's where everything is. That's going to be the core of this. Clearly from everything else, all of the, which, you know, we hear you calling the platitudes and just kind of like a lot of corporate jargon mixed in with like egalitarian sentiments, you know, people I think are not going to be like super, super interested in spending like six figures of donations if they think that 80% of their donations are going to be going to Olympic sports that they'll never even watch and they'll never know any athlete participating in those sports. I hate to be so blunt about it, but that's, you know, that's
the reality.
Reality. So the fact that you can't, you know, I think there will be a major concern that, look, that, you know, we're getting $15 million annually through Boulevard, but our revenue generating sports are only getting pro rata shares based upon, you know, athlete participation, not based upon actual, you know, kind of the revenue generation aspect of those sports. That is a big concern. So I don't know if they're going to be able to meet those targets, those fundraising targets for like Boulevard as a standalone kind of funding operation. I say that in part having known all the people involved in fundraising in the athletic department in recent years and how that staff has changed, been cut back. I'm also a little concerned about the way that this is being rolled out, and it seems like a rather complex model. I'm not against complexity in models like this, but I do wonder, like, who's going to be the person that like administrates this? USC is not exactly known for like hiring the best people when it comes to like doing administration of some of these types of things. They see a lot oftentimes like tends to hire like insiders, people with like familial connections and stuff like that. So I am concerned, especially since like Brandon Sosin is not leaving the athletic department. I don't know if we're going to have like the right, like people of the right sophistication and experience in there to do this kind of stuff. Cause this is like a, like I said, this seems a rather complex thing, not to mention the fact that like going, if you to recruit somebody into the athletic department, USC, to run something like this is not going to be the easiest thing either, because, you know, people who've worked under in the athletic department have like some been charged with federal crimes. They've been subpoenaed. It's, you know, you're potentially putting yourself in a situation where you're going to have like legal trouble. So that like on a macro level, that scares me. That all being said, I think if this is like, the architecture being put into place so that SC can then coordinate these licensing deals and advertising deals for players, that's not the worst thing in the world. I think a free-for-all though might be better. So I'm yet to see this, like, you know, we'll see what they're able to put together here. I'm just skeptical that SC has like enough of the right people in place to put this. Just sounds like a very kind of like intricate, complex operation that really would require some really strong brain power. Like, how do we really do this? And I know that they've said, hey, we had all these great minds putting this together. I know a little bit about how this was put together, and I know Brandon Sosna was a key person in putting it together in the first place, and he's gone. So, I have my suspicions, and I don't know. I guess, you know, my assumption is that this public messaging is coming out now because there's so many concerns about the perception that SC has fallen behind. What do you think, Romer?
Well, I just skimmed through the post right now. It's good that they finally did get a message out there and what their intent is and their direction going forward. I think it's good in that sense that we finally have something solid with what the plan of action is, right? So, but the thing is, how does this connect with kids like Malachi Nelson, who already have a NIL deal and he's a senior in high school? How does that work? Because I know California, they're one of the states that allow kids to, high school kids, make, you know, money off their name, image, and likeness. So would that be in effect, or?
Yeah, and I think, isn't the California law only the California's name, image, and likeness law, I don't actually think has gone into effect yet. I don't think. Maybe I'll check that as we're sitting here. I don't know. You've had some moments to digest what you read to us before, Nick. What are your thoughts now as you continue to read this?
Yeah, so I've kind of gone back and read through a few of these. So I think one of the key things is that just the line of what if I want to contribute to a specific athlete? Because when I think of specific athletes, I think of two kind of buckets, right? Like either established stars, like, you know, the Caleb Williams situation, right? Or I think of prospective athletes, like a five-star recruit. So they say, due to NCAA and USC policy, you are unable to contribute to a specific athlete through our membership programs. However, we highly encourage businesses to work with any individual athlete of their choosing, and we will facilitate that process through a marketing endorsement. So that's basically saying that you can contribute to an athlete. We will help facilitate that process in a sense, but not through a Boulevard membership program. So that seems like a legal workaround to contributing to specific athletes. They also say that they have, let me find the line. They say that we have presented larger contracts to specific athletes totaling over seven figures in value. That number will continue to rise as we raise more funds. So that you know, that sounds to me like they're highlighting the Caleb Williams thing, right?
That's Caleb Williams and maybe Jordan Addison,
right? So those are larger contracts that were presented to Caleb Williams and Jordan Addison, which totaled over seven figures in value. So that's just trying to, you know, they're trying to highlight their credibility there with that. My concern is that when you're dealing with prospective recruits, none of this applies to that. So prospective recruits, if they do commit to USC, they're going to have to take a leap of faith that they're going to get their money, right? Because they're trying, this Boulevard thing is trying to avoid dealing with prospective recruits. Now, like maybe you can have a handshake agreement where like, okay, you sign with USC and then we'll get you your Boulevard money. But it doesn't sound like that's quite in place yet. And I still do have concerns over the 50% rule going to the Olympic sports, which will just inhibit, or, you know, people will be less likely to donate to the Boulevard Fund if they can only donate 50% to a specific sport.
Right. So, and what is, I'm, you know, let me look on it. What is the exact 50% rule here? Okay. So when signing up for membership, you can contribute no more than 50% to a sport specific fund. The other 50% goes to general. Okay. So, you know, that's not the worst thing in the world, I suppose, but it does. If you're just like a football fanatic and all you care about is USC football, which, by the way, I think that probably accounts for maybe majority. 90%. Yeah. I mean, it's hard even trying to get people, you know, to interest in basketball, which is, you know, obviously the only other revenue generating sport. And sometimes it's hard for people to even get interested in that, or there's active hostility toward basketball. Right. You're going to perceive this as a 50% tax, right? So, I mean, you're going to get, I have a feeling you're going to get 90% of people who do donate are going to be donating to football. I also think what's interesting here is this model is not all that different than just the general fundraising model that you would have with like Cardinal and Gold. The only difference is this money is supposed to be going 85%, right, to the actual in the pocket of the student athletes. Okay, so that's fine. But if you, let's say you have, you're a person, you like, I've got $30,000 and I want to, I want to get involved in NIL in some level to get money into the pockets of a student athlete, right? Okay, well, the best, and all you care about is football, hypothetically, because I think that's going to be, you're going to see a lot of people in this range, right? Who make enough of money that $30,000 would be something they'd be willing to give, but they can't, you know, do a ton more than that. Well, you're going to run into a situation where the maximum amount you can give to go to football is going to be 15 of your 30,000, 15,000. And then of that 15%, unfortunately I used 30 as an example here, so the math gets hard, but 15% of the 15,000 is going to be used for overhead. So the maximum you're going to be able to get into the pocket of any student athlete is going to be like $13,000. And you're, you know, so in a way that's almost like a tax. It's almost like your donation to the football team is going to be taxed at a rate of something like 58%. So that is, I think that's something that they're going to have to address over time, because to place both the burden, I mean, a 50% overhead is not a big deal, I don't think, in the scheme of things. I would like to see the overhead smaller than that, particularly since I bet you a lot of this overhead is going to be used to service non-revenue sports. But then you're also forcing the donation to go to non-revenue sports. So I think this is going to cause some issues, I have a feeling. Now, maybe they'll make up for it with large corporate donations, where they're much more open to the idea of, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion. And when it comes to diversity, equity, inclusion in college athletics, it's ironically means steering money away from, you know, Black athletes. Male Black athletes. So maybe you're going to get corporate donations that would be to make up for this. I hope they're, but I don't know if they have the people in place to get these major corporate donations. So those are my thoughts on this model. I think the big thing here is trying to coordinate the advertising licensing deals like you have with Caleb Williams and Jordan Addison. The problem is they just haven't seemed to not have done many of these so far. They didn't work for the transfer market, and you're running into problems with what you identified, Nick, which is you don't really have a system in place where the money can be kind of like guaranteed if you're not already enrolled at USC.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to piggyback off of that a little bit, I think I've heard somewhere that 50% is either like a California law or some sort of NCAA rule, which is why they're doing it. I don't think they address that point in here, but that's something to keep in mind. But Chase, like in your sense, is there anything keeping, like, let's say you're a really rich donor, right? Is there anything keeping you from coordinating with Andy Enfield to go around Boulevard to get a recruit enrolled and then facilitating an NIL deal through Boulevard once they're enrolled to go to that specific athlete?
So I think the issue there is Andy going to feel comfortable talking to you about that subject? If you go to say, "Hey, Andy, I've got $3 million burning a hole in my pocket. I want to set up some system to get some money to some recruits. Who do you want? Tell me who I should be reaching out to." Andy's probably going to be constrained, and knowing kind of who he is and what's happened, he's not, you know, whatever people say about him in all these situations, I think when it comes to these NCAA rules, the guy's pretty conservative. I do not think he wants to put his job in jeopardy. He just got a big new contract that's going to run through 2028. I don't think that he's going to want to put that money in jeopardy. I mean, if you violate NCAA rule, you put yourself into a situation where you can get terminated for cause and the money due under the contract. So is then not available to you. So I really think that he is going to be very reluctant to have like specific conversations. So there needs to be something in place where, you know, where what you're describing can happen and Andy's not really involved.
Yeah, no, I think you do need that system in place. I don't think recruits will just blindly take a leap of faith unless you have a track record of doing that. Now, like, maybe there comes a point where, let's say, I don't know, Drew Peterson or some recruit on the active roster has an NIL deal worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then the assistant coaches can point to that and say, "Look, we've got a kid on campus making 400 grand. He cut a deal with, you know, such and such brand or such and such donor." And they can use that as a recruiting pitch, kind of as a go-between where you have the assistant coach as like a buffer. Now, that kind of happened in the old era where you had assistant coaches as buffers for head coaches, and the head coach would just fire the assistant if they got caught. But, you know, even if you like did have an NIL deal with a current player on the roster, I think that would help things as something you can at least point to saying, "Hey, you know, we are serious about NIL. Look at our current players and what they're making."
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. The problem is you almost need to have every single scholarship for basketball, like every single scholarship player. You know, maybe you could be like, "Oh, with the exception of Harrison Hornery," something like that. They all need to have like substantial NIL deals to then, otherwise the players looking like, "Well, this is a crapshoot, right? I'll come in and maybe I'll get a Drew Peterson deal, or maybe I won't get a Drew Peterson deal." You know, the way to demonstrate it is really to get like every single player under the umbrella of the of an operating NIL deal. And I don't know where we are with anything being close to that.
The other thing too that I think is kind of interesting, right? So even with this 50% going to, you can't contribute more than 50% to a specific sport, In a way, I wonder if that could help basketball in a sense, because it's diverting funds away from football. And just by default, basketball is going to get some of that money. And we don't really know where that 50% is going, right? If it goes towards a general athlete fund, does that mean that general athlete fund gets distributed equally among the, you know, non-revenue sports and basketball? Or is there a way that basketball can get more on a per athlete basis of that 50% going towards a general fund? So I don't really know the details there. They're kind of vague in this general athlete funds, but I think that's kind of interesting. Like, you know, let's say you raise $15 million annually, right? Like if half that goes to football, 7.5, then does that remaining 7.5 million, can basketball get like 2 or 3 million? Because if basketball is getting 2 or 3 million a year, that could fund a good chunk of NIL deals for the roster.
Well, that's absolutely true. I'm just wondering, would SC ever allocate in that, on that basis, that to not just do pure like across the board pro rata? I mean, I know that there's SC just committed, right, to paying every single student athlete, I think scholarship student athlete, a stipend that's like the NCAA maximum under the Alston Court case that went to the Supreme Court. It's a good question. I don't know. I think that's going to be also, you know, internal politics with how the athletic department will operate. That is, you know, look, these are all the critical questions. And is like it said in other ways, is USC going to have to, is the basketball team going to have to share revenue on the same basis as the beach volleyball team, you know, or is there going to be a special preference made because one is a revenue generating sport and one is not, you know, and that's a question I just do not know the answer to.
Yeah. And just to kind of wrap up this discussion too, I mean, you might have some donors, not like a ton, but you might have some donors who do pick basketball as their preferred sport and contribute, you know, their 50% towards basketball as opposed to football. And then the other 50 in, you know, the general athlete fund, even if that's like, you know, let's say that's, I don't know, 10%, right? So 10%, that's 1.5 million. You know, of the $15 million target, picking basketball, half of that goes to 750. That's 750 grand right there, just towards basketball on top of what they would receive in the general fund. So I think like we all have a lot of questions here remaining, but at least this seems like a start of something in place that could potentially help them. So it's a good starting point, but obviously like they still have lots of questions to answer here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's going to be a ton more on this, and hopefully we'll get the podcast up and people can, cause we're going to be the first people talking about this post. I guess would Nick, what else you want to cover before we break for the day?
Yeah. So I think it'd be good just to have a recruiting temperature update and check on where some of these specific recruitments stand. So one thing that I think has come up recently is the Isaiah Collier recruitment. So probably the best recruiting guy on the web is this guy, Andrew Slater, who used to work for the Duke 24/7 site. And now not sure what he's doing. I think he might have been doing some work for the Thunder, but he's still very active on Twitter and in recruiting. I guess he's at Pro Insight now. But anyway, very plugged in guy. And some fan on Twitter asked him where he thought Isaiah Collier was going. And he responded with this photo of just palm trees. So you can interpret that like a few different ways, right? Like, if the main players in that recruitment are USC, UCLA, and Cincinnati, then he's probably not going to Cincinnati, but you don't necessarily know if Slater thinks he's going to go to USC or UCLA. A few other things that have come up on that front is Tracy Pearson of the UCLA 24/7 site in conjunction with that said, oh, USC is the main threat here, not Cincinnati. And then he had a subsequent post where he thought, oh, like UCLA, you know, I still think they probably lead or whatnot. But the Cincinnati 24/7 guy then posted on their board that he thought that USC was a much bigger threat to Cincinnati than UCLA. And also one of the UCLA insiders said he thought that USC had the lead and that Collier, and then the Cincinnati guy also said that Collier's mom lives a mile from the USC campus. So I tend to think that USC is doing a lot better in that recruitment than people think. And if he is going to play in LA, UCLA is also not the kind of school that has a huge collective that's going to lure that kid away from USC for monetary reasons. So I'm starting to get fairly optimistic in that recruitment. I believe he's going to take an official visit to Michigan. So we'll see what happens there, but Michigan also has collective issues. So kind of the players in this recruitment are, you know, USC, UCLA, to a lesser extent, Michigan. These are not the kind of schools with major collectives that are going to lure or recruit away for money reasons. So that's pretty interesting to me. The other thing too is Isaiah Miranda is trending in the wrong direction. This is a longtime USC center target who is now at SoCal Academy. He's mentioning USC less. Georgetown's kind of in the mix there, a good amount. And even like UCLA is starting to get mentions over USC for Isaiah Miranda. Now, I think there's definitely an NIL component to that in terms of why USC is fading, but that doesn't totally explain why he's mentioning UCLA a lot more, given that UCLA has similar issues with their collective. So if you want to get super conspiratorial about it, USC is in a pretty good position right now for Devin Williams out of Corona Centennial. He's a big, he's taken an official to USC in the last few weeks. He's on track for an August decision. I believe he has one more official to UCLA, but USC has been in a pretty good position for him. He's a competent Magic kid. Isaiah Collier's AAU teammate, Arrington Page, is also a big, and there's been a long, they've been anticipated to be a package deal for a long time. He has taken an official visit to USC. He has not taken an official visit to UCLA. So let's say Collier and Page are leaning towards USC and Devin Williams is leaning towards USC. You're talking about two bigs in Arrington Page and Devin Williams. So maybe that's the reason that Miranda is not mentioning USC as much, if they feel very good about Williams and Page coming in. Now, obviously, I think that's the rosiest way to look at the situation. But at the same time, it would make some sense if they do think they're in a really good position with those guys. And then also considering that Miranda's mentioning UCLA more, that kind of implies that NIL is not the sole reason for kind of moving USC down a peg. So lots to kind of unpack there. You know, these recruitments are kind of tied together, but.
Well, with Collier, we just have to think back where his recruitment kind of came to light. I remember Brandon Jenkins kind of poked his head in the peristyle about a year ago. And he stated that Isaiah Collier was a kid that USC has been looking at, and they kind of built up a great relationship with him and his family and his mom in particular, and that his family is originally from LA. So that's where it kind of first started, right? It kind of is trending back in that direction because it kind of went silent with Isaiah Collier. He was mentioning UCLA more. He visited USC as well. But I guess UCLA's main idea was pairing him up with Ron Holland, right? So that obviously didn't work out. Holland's not considering UCLA anymore. But, and then again, a few weeks later, the staff was looking at Arrington Page's teammate, who also plays in the same AAU, the Skill Factory. And another gem is that they were still interested in him due to the fact that Andy Enfield was actually at the EYBL in Kansas City a few weeks ago, or was it last week? And Collier didn't play. He was injured. He was actually held out with a knee injury, but Arrington Page was there. But, you know, Andy was there watching front and center. And then all this came about with Andrew Slater's post, Tracy's post and then what Nick mentioned, the post from the Cincinnati message board that we came across from. So if you put all that together, USC has always been in the mix. UCLA was never really interested in Aronson Page. That's always been the play. Those two obviously want to play with each other. Miranda was a longtime kid who actually we discovered way before UCLA did or anyone out west. We all thought he was for sure going to head to UCLA, especially with him transferring over to SoCal Academy. But, you know, Mick Cronin was front and center watching him play down here in Long Beach. Jay Morris was there as well. But if you have a head coach watching a kid as opposed to an assistant, and he wasn't even in sight, that kind of has to say something, right? With Devin Williams, his commitment is pretty imminent. I don't think UCLA is really looking in his direction. And, you know, Miranda's trending away from us. So the tea leaves state that the staff feels good or in a great position to land the two kids from Georgia as opposed to Cincinnati. Regardless, the connection with Cincinnati and Collier and Aronson Page is that Cameron Dollar's brother is actually a staff member on there, and he has a lot of deep ties in Georgia, the grassroots. So that's kind of always been the connection there. But the strong enough connection is the fact that Collier and his mom want to be in LA. So that's kind of where it stands. And another tidbit is Xavier Brown actually recently committed to St. Joe's, and he was actually scheduled to take an official visit to USC at the end of this month. So what does that kind of tell you, right?
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of signs pointing in the direction of SC for Collier and Page. I will say I'm skeptical just because of this, how dire the NIL situation has been presented to me. That being said, you know, I if you remember, Nick, a few podcasts back, I talked about how Dillingham is like a unique situation for USC, where USC really should be trying to get more involved, because like that would be a potential big NIL situation for that SC could offer. And I just don't think SC had its ducks in a row to really get involved there. But in the case of Collier, who's not quite as like a clear, let's say, one and done, high profile player, if he's trying to play near his mom, and SC saying, look, we can't get you signed up for an NIL deal. We can't give it to you right now, but get in here. Look what happened with Caleb Williams. Look what happened with Jordan Addison. We're going to get you an NIL deal, you know? So maybe that's enough. Maybe that's enough to push things over the finish line for he and Page. I don't know. It would really obviously be critical for SC's class that if they were to land those two guys, that would really turn things. I think that, you know, Devin Williams is a situation where I don't think you're going to find a lot of programs that would have like a guaranteed NIL package available to him. He's more of a project. And I think in the ordinary course, if we had a great NIL system set up, I don't know if you'd actually be bringing him in as a straight out of high school player. You might be looking at him more down the road as like the transfer market. Because I don't know if he's like a really like a ready to play kind of guy. I know that's where I stand. I think, there are a lot of tea leaves pointing in the direction of Collier and Page to SC, but it's, for me, it's like seeing is believing. I really need to see this happening.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to look at another kind of positive note with that, is it sounds like all these recruitments are probably going to come to a head before the season. So it's looking like Aronson Page has a visit to Indiana coming up in late July. Indiana's kind of the major player for him that's not also recruiting Collier. So they're just recruiting Page kind of on his own. Mike Woodson over there. So we'll see if anything comes of that. But otherwise, it looks like Devin Williams is on track for a decision in August. I think that Collier and Page are also kind of on track for a decision in like the August, September timeframe. So we're going to get some resolution on this soon enough. I know that Tracy Pearson also mentions that he thinks that USC and UCLA are each going to get one of Miranda and Devin Williams. So I think that was kind of interesting, which I think is also our expectation. And the other kind of recruit to mention too is Cody Williams, who is the wing from Arizona, recently got offered by Arizona and UCLA, I believe, within the last month or two, and had a very hot summer, has kind of risen to top 30 status on 24/7. And he recently, you know, put out there's an article featuring him dropping like a sentence or two on each of his favorite schools. And I think USC got a pretty favorable blurb in that. I don't want to read too much into that, but he specifically mentioned Drew Peterson and, you know, how they have a player like him and kind of that usage, and they're kind of pitching him on that. So I don't know, Romer, I'll throw it over to you on Cody Williams. You might have more insight than me, but that kind of feels like a USC, Arizona, and maybe UCLA battle if they try to get in the mix.
Yeah, for sure. This is a kid that's looking to play out west and kind of stay within the region. USC was actually one of the first schools that offered him. They went to watch him play in Section 7 last year. And since then, they've been on him. You know, I kind of heard something along the lines that they actually tried to get his brother to try to transfer to USC as well, but that obviously didn't work out. He made it as a first-round pick in the NBA, and that would have been kind of good to see. But they built a good relationship with him. And from what I hear, he's looking to visit, I wanted to say sometime in August. But there was also a blurb in that same article stated that. And after August, the visits are going to reset or something like that. But this is a kid that's definitely going to take an official visit on campus. He's already visited Santa Clara, where his brother was playing at. So he's definitely looking to stay in California or in Arizona. But Arizona got to him pretty late. He even mentioned that in the article. Another thing about Collier, I'm going to point back to one of his other recruitment updates, is that Cincinnati was more appealing to him because of the fact that they're moving over to the Big 12. Now, with USC moving over to the Big 10, that also helps our chances with him as well.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Romer. So a couple of things. First, on Williams, I think one of his eight schools was LMU, right?
Yes.
So that's, you don't normally see an update like that where USC, UCLA, Arizona are being discussed. And I mean, Santa Clara makes sense because his brother went there, but to also include LMU makes you think, is he more keen on Los Angeles? On the point about the conferences, this is where I think things could make a difference with a guy like Williams or in a guy like Page.
Oh, actually playing in California or staying in the West Coast.
Right, staying in the West Coast, right. But, you know, it's like, it's not like San Diego State, right? It's like, or maybe that was on the list too, but LMU is very specific to Southern California. It was a USF or something like that. So we haven't really seen yet the impact of what basketball recruiting on SC's move to the Big Ten, but for sure, SC is going to be able to say to recruits, if you're considering Arizona, you're considering USC, not only are we putting a ton of kids in the NBA right now, not to say Arizona's not, but we're putting in just as many as Arizona has been, you are going to be on better television programming starting not your freshman year, but your sophomore year. This is for the class of 2023 kids. Starting your sophomore year, you're going to be on Big Ten programming, which means much better television placements, much more priority of scheduling. You're not going to be stuck on, you know, having games, your games, you know, starting 11 o'clock Eastern and being aired on ESPNU or FS1 or, God forbid, the Pac-12 network. And we don't know exactly how the TV deal is going to break down for the Big Ten. We've seen some rumors that, you know, NBC might be getting involved. That would be interesting. They obviously have their own specific sports network. I think they'd have to expand beyond that for basketball. But, you know, it's one of those things where, like, would NBC start putting college basketball on primetime during the season? I mean, they're, you know, it's not like a lot of people are watching like the scripted programs on NBC, you know? So I wouldn't be shocked if they had on a Thursday night, Friday night, maybe in a Monday night, NBC had a Big Ten game if they were buying into spending all this money to get part of the Big Ten deal. So I don't know if Nick, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of certainly a ton of upside with the move in terms of getting on TV and just kind of everything we've touched on with the Big Ten. Just in terms of recruiting, I mean, it's really intriguing. Like, I know we've kind of talked about the limitations of USC's NIL in a pessimistic way, but like, let's say you do, you know, land Devin Williams, Isaiah Collier, Aaronson Page, Cody Williams. I mean, these are four like legit contributors to your program. And I think Collier especially, right? This kid's ranked fourth on the On3 rankings in the country. He's probably the best passing point guard to come out of high school basketball in a long time. I mean, you kind of just, even if you throw him on the roster next year with Reese Dixon Waters, and if you're able to get Vince Iwuchukwu, Johnny Wright, Trey White back for another year, I mean, that's going to be a really, really good team. And it doesn't even mention, you know, Cody Williams, Devin Williams, Aaronson Page, some of the other guys you might have coming in who can play spot minutes. So, you know, there's still a ton of potential in the program for sure. And I think we just have to see how this NIL thing plays out. But I am intrigued by this new Boulevard thing. And like, while we do have our questions, you know, the upside's certainly there with the Big Ten move for continued upward progression of the program.
All right. Well, we've been on for a while. And Romer, you got anything else you want to talk about before we break?
No, that's it. We pretty much covered everything.
Nick, you got anything?
Don't think so. Just, yeah, fun pod and great having you guys on.
Yep. And hopefully we can get Romer for more pods coming in the future. Hopefully we have some good news to tell, and maybe this Boulevard thing is, you know, will do enough. They're realizing that there's a situation that needs to be addressed, and there's enough pressure put on the administration to really get some movement. And of course, when it comes to USC basketball, like, it's, you know, just 3-4 NIL deals, line them up for these recruits and SC, I think, can bag these guys, because everyone is in the state of chaos on NIL, and there's so many top 100 players still on the board. So that's my piece. Until next time, everybody, fight on.
Fight on.
Fight on.